Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into another Behind the Bets podcast. We are taping this on Wednesday, November 20th. Got some barn burners of a game tonight. We got a little Maction last night. A little 2-0, Travis, on Daily Wager on the Maction.
There's nothing better than Maction. It is the best.
Phenomenal marketing idea just to start owning those midweek. And then Fun Belt gets involved too, but just a really smart idea. It's fun. And look, I was a little worried when Bowling Green kept scoring in the first half. Fortunately, they can't tackle and gave up all these points and did not cover the 21.
Yeah, like what's the point of burying yourself on Saturday? No one's going to be, and you're not on national television. Instead, you're getting on E1 and like it's just smart.
It's great. No, it's great. And sometimes they've had really like solid teams, right? Like not so much this year. Ohio's been a disappointment this year. So I kind of like the Redhawks laying the big lumber with Akron tonight. Akron winless against the Rhodes. We'll get into that with John Murray and other plays from behind the counter. And Paul Stone's going to return as well. Paul was really strong last week, able to flush out some winners for yours truly. Travis, question for you. Couple weeks to go in the college football regular season. We do picks on ESPN.com's chalk section. I'm at 57%. So obviously having another strong year. Do I just like take a knee, play prevent, give like one pick each of the next 3 weeks?
No, you can't do that.
Kind of just go like victory formation.
You don't get crazy, but if you like a game, you make the pick off of that moment. You can't look at the totality of everything.
Well, that's what's going to be evaluated. I mean, it's important. It's a little bit of a game. It's a little game theory involved, no?
I mean, listen, if you like it, you go for it. But if there's a game that you're like, you don't need to make it, then don't go for it.
Yeah, I really liked last week's card. So I had 7 plays. Only went 4-3, to be honest. I really should have added Louisville and another one. I should have been, and then not got cute with the team total and Rutgers and whatever. Anyways, I did well. So it's just kind of fun. Maybe the last week, if I'm sitting there and I won't force any plays. But, yeah, I got to stay true to what's working. So I have a few plays that are elite. But to your point, I'm on the fence with a few. I haven't really finalized my list. There weren't plays I loved. Like last week, I really liked the card. So let's get into it with Paul.
Baby needs a new pair of shoes. Come on.
And we got those shoes last week. Solid, solid podcast a week ago with Paul Stone, who returns this week. Paul, you almost swept the board, if not for a ridiculous beat with Colorado State and the pick six from the goal line.
Yeah, I tell you, that was one of the worst beats of the year, without question, and almost swept the board, but a good week nonetheless, not only for myself, but you had a great week as well, so maybe we can continue it this week, I believe, in week 13 of the college football season.
You know, it's like dating, Paul. They say you can't really put your finger on chemistry. We just have it, I guess. That's what it is. Question, do you sweat out these games? Were you watching that pick six?
You know, I wasn't. I was following it, but a lot of times I don't watch the games, especially towards the end of the evening. I had to get up real early that next morning and actually drive to the airport to get out to Vegas. So I was not actually watching it, which, to be blunt, I'm glad I wasn't. But one of those things, this long season, those things happen. Hopefully they happen collectively in our favor, but, yeah, I wasn't watching, so I'm glad I didn't have to endure it in that manner.
Yeah, technically it was a 99-yard pick six for Air Force. You're sitting there with CSU plus 10.5, and they're on the goal line there trying to cut into a 10-point game, and you can even take the field goal and be okay because there's only a few minutes left. And I think it's sort of overlooked in all this is that Colorado State also started the game 14-0 going into the second quarter. So you're already up 14-0 plus 10 and a hook, and then you get outscored 38-7 the rest of the way. So a little disappointing on that front, but you're right. I bounced back. I really liked the card. It's funny is like there were a few plays I almost left off. I left off that were winners too, like Louisville minus 4 I thought was really solid play, and the derivatives got me. So the Rutgers team total under first half, UMass team total over, should have just grabbed the points. But woulda, coulda, shoulda, had a plenty of wins. Let's get to this week. And I want to start with the big game at the Horseshoe, Ohio State, Penn State. This number's gone up a little bit now. It's over 18 and a hook. How are you seeing it?
I'll tell you, Doug, I had a guy employed at one of the local books there in Vegas ask me what I made my number on this game on Sunday after Circa opened it at Ohio State minus 17. And he was thinking more like 14. So he was probably a little disappointed when I told him I made it 20. This is Ohio State team that, you know, they're winning by huge margins. They actually joined the 1971 Nebraska team this past weekend as the only team in the last 100 years of college football to win their first 10 games by 24 or more points. Average margin of victory so far for the Buckeyes, 41.7 points per game. That's more than 7 points better than the next best team, Clemson, in that statistical category. So they are blowing people out. I also saw on your network, ESPN, last night that the Buckeyes are rivaling an Army team from the 1940s for historical supremacy in the category of point differentials. So they are just running people out of the building. No secret that the last 3 years, Ohio State has stubbed its toe as a large favorite. Last year at Purdue, the year before that at Iowa, in 2016 it was at Penn State. But those three games, obviously, on the road. The Buckeyes are at the Shoe Saturday. The Buckeyes are better this year than those three additions, in my opinion. Might be important to add as well that Chase Young, who I believe is the best player in all of college football, Chase Young and his 13.5 sacks, back after a two-game suspension. I think he's going to be highly motivated. I think he's going to be disruptive on the defensive front. I think Ohio State's going to be able to stretch the field vertically. Minnesota hurt Penn State, pretty significantly with their receivers. And Tyler Johnson for Minnesota and Bateman for Minnesota, two great receivers, but they're not at the level of the guys that Ohio State will throw at Penn State. I think Ohio State wins this game by 20 points plus.
Look, they're 8-2 against the spread all year, and 9-1 in the first half, as we learned the hard way last week with Rutgers, as the Rutgers being the lone cover in the first half. But I just think this Buckeyes team, motivated, all that stuff that you touched on, I'm probably going to lay it as well. It's not one of my top plays, but that's where I'm looking, at least initially. There's no way I would play Penn State in this game. I liked a lot of games in two conferences, and I want to do the Big Ten first. And I think this Minnesota team's got some injury issues, but I'm going back to the Northwestern train, and I'm going to probably lay the 13.5 at Northwestern. Any thoughts there?
Well, I'm a little concerned about, first of all, Minnesota's quarterback is in the concussion protocol, and it's kind of been the standard fare, it seems like, the last couple of years when guys go into that concussion protocol, that they sit out one game and then return the next game. So I don't anticipate that he's going to play this week at Northwestern. Northwestern obviously is a team that's quite challenged offensively. It would be difficult to take the points, even though they're fairly generous, I think, at about 13.5. But I'm a little bit concerned about Minnesota, even though they still have the goal in front of them of making the Big Ten championship game. They did have their national playoff bubble probably burst last week. In the loss at Iowa. So this is probably a stay-away game for me, but I'll certainly be behind you if you decide to take the Gophers there.
Yeah, it's just I just think that's kind of a cheap line for a team like Northwestern, even with a backup quarterback. Minnesota can run all over them. I don't think Northwestern's defense is that strong. But anyways, you're right, though. I mean, I know about the quarterback situation. But so another game that's caught my eye is Iowa hosting Illinois, and this one's over two touchdowns. At 15.5, I like the Illini here. I think they have plenty of speed to keep this within the number.
Yeah, and I haven't played this game either, but I'm certainly with you there. For me, it would either be the Illini or no one. Iowa, they're known for playing great defense and running the ball, and they typically shrink the game with that rush game. And part of that equation is that they're not historically strong as double favorites, which is the role that they're in here against the Fighting Illini. So certainly I think if you're going to take a side in that Illinois-Iowa game, that it would be take Illinois plus those double-digit points.
And another game in the conference, I'm going back to Rutgers, but I think I'm going to back Sparty here. I know I've been fading them all year in a lot of ways. I think this is the time to back Michigan State. Rutgers is pretty bad. 20.5, though. 20.5 is a big number.
Yeah, I mean, it is a big number, but, I don't think anybody could, as you like to say, and I don't want to mess up your saying, but hard-earned pre-tax income, it's hard to bet that money on Rutgers at this stage because they're just, they're getting beat each week and they're getting defeated decisively. Michigan State, on the other hand, though, that's another team that it's really tough for me to get a grip on where their psyche is right now. They're just they've got a lot of turmoil, not only on the field but off the field. But at the same time, even though it's 20.5, for me it would have to be Michigan State or no one. I just couldn't, like you, I couldn't back Rutgers under any circumstance.
Yeah, it's probably going to be the game I'm leaving off a card just because it's both teams that are fades. Sparty is not covered in 6 straight, but it could be a get-right game for Michigan State. And this is the time of year, even started a week or two ago, is when you start after looking into the potential of bowl eligibility. And here's Sparty at 4 wins. Do they care enough to circle the wagons and win their last 2 at Rutgers and then home to Maryland to be bowl eligible? I don't know. You mentioned the psyche, so you're right. There's something to be said about that. It's not like a team that's on the incline like Louisville, which was a really good bet-on spot a week ago. When they were facing NC State, they had already surpassed their season win total of 3.5. This was a team that was on the incline, like I mentioned. So definitely a different situation. So I've been being thorough here, and I'm flushing it out with you. Let's go to another play for you. Let's get away from the Big Ten. Let's go to UCF and Tulane.
Yeah, this is an interesting game. You know, UCF is a team that, the last couple of years they've been, whether warranted or not, they've been in the national playoff discussion at some level, even though it would be very difficult for them to make it. But they've, won a lot of football games a couple of years ago, I believe, went undefeated, and last year undefeated in the regular season before losing to LSU in the bowl game. But this year has been a little bit of a step down for the Knights. I think they've lost 3 games. Don't have the same types of goals at the end of this season that they've had in previous years. End of November is where teams kind of start to lose their steam sometimes. They've been practicing since early August. A team like UCF, who's had greater levels of attainment the previous couple of years, and now they're just kind of running out the string, so to speak. I think it sets up well for Tulane. Tulane getting 6 points there in New Orleans. UCF, I believe, has lost 3 of their last 4 road games, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's a good spot for Tulane. I'm taking the 6 points and Tulane over UCF.
How much of a bye week at this juncture of the season factors into your handicapping? Because UCF is coming off a bye.
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely helps. I think it not only helps on the mental side of things, but also on the physical side of things, just to get a week off from the bumps and bruises and, all those types of things. You get some players healed and back on the field, maybe who haven't been playing, and then you get those players who are most of your players who are playing at some level less than 100%, closer to 100%. So I think it's a positive, but it's not the end-all, be-all, so to speak. There are other factors to consider, and I just think this UCF team, I think they're running out of emotional gas, so to speak, and I think Tulane still excited about the prospects for the season. Willie Fritz is building a program there, and I think better things are on the horizon for the Green Wave, and I think a victory over UCF would go a long way for the Green Wave towards building a little momentum for the spring and the 2020 season.
I like it. Let's keep it in the conference, and let's go Tulsa at Lane 3 at home to Houston.
Yeah, this is a interesting game here as well. You know, Houston, the first year with Dana Holgorsen there as head coach has been very odd, to say the least. For the sake of review, back on September 19th, Houston's playing their American Athletic Conference opener at Tulane. They lead by 21 points. They let that lead slip away. Tulane comes back and wins that game 38-31.
Yep, I was on that. I was on the wrong side there.
I was on Houston as well. you were on the right side or the wrong side?
Right.
I was on the wrong side. I had Houston in that
one.
But the following Monday, as we'll all recall, their uber-talented quarterback, De'Eriq King, who I believe was a fringe Heisman Trophy candidate, shockingly announces that he's taking a red shirt and essentially hanging it up for the rest of the 2019 season. One of his top receivers, Keith Corbin, announces he's doing the same. Holgorsen, acts like he supports the idea. He pitches kind of a song and dance about his predecessors not redshirting enough players for maximum roster development. And still, though, it's just an extremely odd situation. It reeks of players quitting on their teammates. And I think it's now that we get to the stretch run again, the final couple of games of the year, I think Houston's a team, much like UCF and maybe even at a higher level, who I would say, again, is out of physical and emotional gas, just based on their primary goals no longer being realistic. They've had other players who bailed out on the season. It's been just a really hot season for them. And, you know, I just think Houston's at a difficult juncture in the season. Tulsa, their quarterback, Baylor transfer Zach Smith, questionable, may not play against Houston. But his backup, Seth Boomer, he played, I think, started 9 games last year. Is a little bit of a drop-off from Smith, but he's won football games for Tulsa. He's played a lot of football. Tulsa, I believe, right now laying 3. I think the Golden Hurricane beat Houston by a touchdown or more.
I think you're on to something here. I think I like this a lot. Only 3 wins this year for Houston, so bowl eligibility is out of the question. And I will say this. There was a juncture in the middle of the season, like that game against Cincinnati, where they were playing hard. Now, they didn't cover, but that was a strong backdoor cover, if you will, on the favorite with Cincy there. But a couple of games, they've played pretty hard, all things considered, but I think this is the right side. I think that's my favorite play that you've pointed out so far. That's a solid one, my friend. Okay, I mentioned 2 conferences. Let's go to the second one. I'm in the Pac-12 a lot. I'm going to start with Utah, and they're laying 22.5 at Arizona. And you're thinking, well, Khalil Tate zipping around. This Utah defense is so loaded, and I don't think people really realize. Everyone's sort of earmarking Oregon for the Pac-12 and maybe a chance in the college football playoff, but I think Utah's going to beat them. I think this Utes team is so stout defensively, and their offense kind of gets dismissed. And they eventually make plays, like they get short fields with the defense, turnovers or whatever, and they've just smacked teams. Now, look what they've given up in their last, I don't know, 5 games. UCLA, they allowed 3 points. They went to Washington, gave up 28. That was a bizarre game, but it was like Washington Super Bowl. Then they gave up 0 to Cal, 3 to ASU, 7 to Oregon State, 13 to Wazoo. I mean, this is a really stout defense. And then that USC game was so strange. Had the turnovers, the penalties, just a bizarre game. So I think this Utah team just puts the clamps down. I think you're looking at a 35-6 game.
Yeah, I mean, this is you mentioned Khalil Tate. The Khalil Tate that we saw in 2017 is just a distant memory, unfortunately. He's just not, you know, statistically, just not the same guy. This Arizona team in the second year of Kevin Sumlin's tenure, just something missing, and clearly a lot of what's missing is the defense. You know, they can't stop people. They've been very leaky on defense. You mentioned Utah's defense. That's just a big time stop unit. They've got an improved play at quarterback from Tyler Huntley. They have one of the best running backs in the nation in Zach Moss. What a showdown it's going to be. I know the Pac-12's taken a lot of criticism the past few years on their overall strength of conference. But that Utah-Oregon game, that's as intriguing as any game remaining on the schedule in my mind outside of maybe the college football playoff. That's really going to be, it's going to be near a pick'em game, and I think it's going to be an evenly split game among bettors. And Utah's playing great football, and, you know, I have not taken a position on this game, but certainly just based on the trajectory of both teams' season at this point, it would either be Utah or nothing for me as well.
More with Paul Stone in just a moment, but first, a word from one of our sponsors. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually, guys just brush it off or blame themselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about with a real doctor who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you free, 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to Roman.com/Doug and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Just go to GetRoman.com/Doug to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/Doug for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/Doug. And now back with Paul Stone. Another game that's caught my eye is ASU hosting Oregon. Ducks laying 14.5 here. I kind of like Herm and the Sun Devils. I think ASU has plenty of offensive power to keep this within the number. And Oregon, I know it sounds crazy because it's been so synonymous with offense over the years, but I don't think their offense is that explosive. I think they kind of grind clock. Like last week, for example, their team total in the second half was 21.5 in a blowout, and I just thought that was way too high. And they just kind of bleed clock, and Cristobal just wants to kind of rely on his defense and get out of there with a win. And I think this is kind of going to be one of those games where it's like 30-20.
Yeah, and I wish I had the statistic. I thought I had it in front of me, but the underdog in games coached by Herm Edwards the first 2 years at Arizona State is covering at a pretty good rate. So if you take Arizona State as an underdog, as they are this week against Oregon, or if you fade Arizona State when they're a favorite, you've made some pretty good money in Herm Edwards' 2 seasons there. So I'm like you. I think Oregon's you know, they're a solid football team, but they're not as explosive maybe as they've been in some past years. But this is a game that, again, I haven't taken a position, but I think it's one I'm still looking at, and I'm looking at the side that you're going to take in Arizona State. I think this is a game they can keep close and they can, you know, keep within the number. You've got a generous amount of points there, and I think it's one that is worth looking at in Arizona State there.
Looks like 8-2, quick glance and quick math as I'm going through their schedule. It looks like 8-2, the underdog in their games this year. So that would point to that, and I don't have last year's in front of me. So I like ASU there, probably going to be on them. And I like Utah, probably going to be on the Utes as well. And let's go to one your final game, and let's go to the Mountain West, San Diego State against Hawaii.
I'm going to give you a total in this game. You know, Hawaii is a team that's a high-scoring team offensively, and defensively they give up a lot of points as well. But as we know, San Diego State offensively, they've been really challenged this year. Their trademark under Rocky Long there at San Diego State has been to play real tough, stern defense and then use a ball control offense. And that ball control offense has historically really featured a top-notch running back. I mean, just in recent memory, they've had Rashad Penny, Donnell Pumphrey, a couple of guys that come to mind. But they don't have that caliber of back this year. You look at the Aztecs, and it's almost head-scratching, but they rank 118th in yards per rush attempt at just 3.4 yards per carry. They're 104th in scoring offense at 22 points per game. They really hadn't scored points against anybody. You look at Hawaii in their last 4 games against San Diego State, and actually their last 5 games against San Diego State, and the game last year actually went to overtime. But Hawaii has only averaged 64.2 plays per game against San Diego State the last 5 games. That's about 7.5 plays fewer than their average for those seasons. 64.2 plays per game. Just for reference sake, the average number of plays by a team in a college football game this year is 71 plays. So far fewer plays Hawaii is getting San Diego State, as the Aztecs have been able to slow the pace down against the Rainbow Warriors. You look at the last 5 years versus San Diego State, points in regulation for Hawaii. Hawaii scored 24 points last year in regulation, 7 points in 2017. They were shut out by the Aztecs in 2016, scored 14 points in 2015, and then just 10 points back in 2014. I could go on and on, but this one screams under, in my opinion. Take this game to go under the total of 51.
Really good analysis there. My one pushback, I guess, is I feel like Hawaii takes all these shots downfield. And against Fresno, they had a few drops in the second half. Yes, I stayed up late and watched it, even though I had to get up at 6 a.m. Trust me, my producers yell at me every Sunday morning for it. And then they convert them last week. It's just sort of a feast or famine with this Hawaii team. And sometimes the game can just get out of control with if they collect. I think Bird is one of their receivers. They throw deep for him. He's short, but he's fast as can be.
Yeah, they do take some shots. And, you know, San Diego State's defense, though, especially in the back, not to be confused with Fresno's. Fresno's had some good defenses, obviously, under Jeff Tedford there, but their defense this year is certainly not that strong. And a lot of the defenses in the Mountain West this year, I think, even by their previous standard, a little bit down. San Diego State continues to play strong defense, and I think Hawaii is going to, again, have difficulty scoring. scoring points. And, you know, I don't think they're going to score more than 21 points here, which would put us in good shape for that. So yeah. I like the play.
I like it. Let's go to a team that used to play in the Mountain West, BYU. I can't get through a podcast without mentioning UMass, right? I kind of want to lay the 40.5 here. UMass is bad, man. They're really, really bad.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they're bad. We've talked about it at historical levels. You know, I've done power ratings for over 25 years, Doug, and I tweeted a few weeks ago that UMass's current power rating is the lowest, and I've got a pretty good database and a pretty good memory. I think they have the lowest current power rating of any team in my long history of maintaining power ratings. So they are a historically bad team. Their defense is atrocious. It's a very uphill situation there. You know, you can't take UMass. There's just no way in my mind that you can, even at that high of a number, can you take the Minutemen. The Cougars, again, I'm not going to be involved because it's just a little bit of a scary proposition laying that kind of wood with BYU. But at the same time, again, if a person's going to get involved and they ask my opinion, which side should I take, it would absolutely be BYU because I'm not taking UMass at any number.
Yeah, the Cougs have had some big numbers that they haven't covered. It's frustrating, but I think UMass. So this is a game I'm thinking about. I do have one SEC game, and it's a team I've been looking to fade, and that's Missouri, and I bet on is Tennessee. This Tennessee team is playing much better late. I know Kelly Bryant's back for the Tigers, but I think this line should be like almost basically a pick, and I'm getting 4 points. I'll take the Vols.
Yeah, this line, you know, I've been out at Circa in Vegas throughout most of the season on Sunday morning when they opened the first college football numbers in the whole world, to be blunt about it. And I believe this game opened Missouri -7. It quickly got bet down. And for me, again, it would be Tennessee or nothing, but it's difficult for me to take four when there was at least at one opportunity a 7 available. You know, 4 basically just indicates that these teams are power rated even. I do like where Tennessee is in terms of building their program and still excited about this season on an upward plane. And I think Missouri certainly would be a team that's kind of leveled out, failed to meet expectations, would be a little bit more likely to be less emotionally invested in this particular game. So I would take, again, not just to agree with you for agreement's sake, but genuinely, I would take Tennessee plus the points or nothing, but I won't be involved since I know there was a 7 available, a 6 available for a little bit, and it's just difficult for me at this point to take 4 when better numbers were out there. But again, I would take Missouri or nothing.
So you raise a point and a philosophy I've heard a lot from several pro bettors and respected handicappers, and I actually don't agree with that philosophy, so I want to talk it out with you. So you're saying because one book offered 7 and 6, one book in the world, you can't like fundamentally grab 4, even though let's say it's your number, say it's a play. You just because of that sort of you just know that you didn't get the best number. That's interesting to me. I would think it's something you kind of have to get over. But if you still like it at 4, like I wouldn't let that influence me ultimately.
I make numbers on games, and I actually made the number Missouri -6.5, even though I'm saying that
gotcha.
You know, it would really be Tennessee or nothing for me. Sometimes the numbers are kind of my starting point for a potential play, but I think the number at around 6 or 7 was really the correct number, and I can't totally disagree with what you're saying. Just because the numbers moved, it doesn't totally discount the fact that there might still be value on the team that the line, you know, quote, is moved against. But it's just difficult for me. It's just maybe it's a mental hang-up.
Yeah.
But a lot of my approach to betting college football is the number, and it's hard for me to take a lesser number when a better number was available. But I can't totally – I know it's kind of an approach that can't be just totally explained or supported by, you know, science or whatever. So I can't totally fault your disagreement with it. But that's just one, you know, we all develop our own individual strategies and our approaches. And hopefully we have some credence and credibility and support behind our theories and our thoughts. But you know, you kind of have a game plan, and whatever your game plan is, hopefully it's positive, and hopefully you stick with it. And that's just kind of one of the tenets of my sports betting philosophy there.
No, it's wonderful, and it's not, you know, you're in the majority. There's a lot of people who believe that. I guess, so sometimes I've heard it on, like, second half lines. So let's say a team's up 20 to nothing, and the new line's, like, pick for the second half, and then the spread for the game was 10. And you hear things like, well, I can't lay 20 for a game when I could have had 10. It's like, well, it's a different game. It's a different bet. And let's say the quarterback's out on the team you're fading. And it's just, people need to kind of get off this, just kind of like look at it in a separate sort of situation, not just look at it based on the original game line. Now, that's a different scenario. I hear it a lot. I'm like, well, if you're telling me they're getting the kickoff and certain guys out and maybe they've quit or whatever, it's just a different sort of situation, and you can't reference the original line. Sometimes, like a game that pops into mind is Ohio State Michigan last year, right? A lot of people were taking Michigan plus the points at home. I think it was like 3.5, I want to say. And, you know, Ohio State was favored, and then you see like the first couple drives, and you're like, this is a blowout. This is a blowout. They're running everything underneath, all the crossing, and the speed is just overwhelming the Michigan defense. And so I think I laid like 10.5 in game or something insane. And I'm not, you know, I was like, I'm not against that. If I could have had whatever it was, 3 at game time, it doesn't mean I'm taking a bad number. It's a different bet.
No, and I agree with you. I mean, you make a valid point, Doug. That's a little bit different situation in my mind, because as you're pointing out, you've got two quarters of data. You've watched a football game. You've seen the flow of the game. You've perhaps seen a player go into the locker room for an injury, and you think there's at least a possibility, if not a probability, that they won't return. So I think the second half betting strategy is a little bit different there when you compare it to the opening number. I think you've seen two quarters of football. You've seen the direction that you think the game's going. You've seen potential injury situations. So that's a little bit different in my mind. Second half bets, although it's not on the agenda, I'll point out that this week I think there are 5 games in the SEC where the SEC team is playing an FCS team. I don't have exact data in front of me, but in the second half of those games, historically the last 10 years, if you in the second half would take the FCS team that's going to be probably pretty significantly outscored in the first half, take the FCS team blindly in the second half and see what happens in those 5 games this weekend. Hopefully they won't go 0-5 now that I've said that, but those FCS teams in the second half have historically done pretty well.
No, it's a great strategy. It's an absolutely great strategy. And I wasn't necessarily bringing it up for the sake of our argument. Just some of our listeners, and you know, I get questions on Twitter like that, so I wanted to just kind of answer a bunch of questions like hedging. I can't remember the specific game, but a few weeks ago, they had like plus 10 in the game where a team like led by 14 at the break. They're, you know, it's like, that's just a separate bet. There's no hedging there. Like, you know, some would say that to come full circle with your Colorado State Air Force situation. If you're sitting there with plus 10.5 in your pocket and you're up 14 nothing after one, should you live bet to hedge? I don't know what it was. Pick 'em, maybe plus 2.5 for the other side at that juncture in the early second quarter. And I just think you have to look at it a lot of these times as just a separate play. So that's what I was sort of bringing up. You can't look at it all these times with the original game line.
I agree with you. I mean, you don't want to turn one winning bet into one winner and one loser. Right. You know, if you do choose to take the other side for the second half, you have to view it as more, because things can happen. The game can turn quickly, and you have to view it as kind of an insurance policy, you know, to mitigate any potential loss if the unlikely happens and the other team that you're not on comes storming back. But I'm like you. I've heard a long time ago that don't turn one winning bet into a winner and a loser by making a second half play on the other team.
Right, because there's times where you're on a side that's dead from the start. You don't get to hedge out of that and get a win to go 1-1.
Right.
You're sitting 0-1. There's no way out of it. I will say that there is a fun part of creating almost like a triple middle, where you get such a big spread, you can create like a pocket. So let's say you're plus 10, and then you're like plus 2.5 the other side, and it's sitting at like 9, and the other team's driving, and unless a pick 6 happens, you can actually basically bail out of the one bet, eat juice on the hedge, and then you're sitting here with your game winning bet, and then they actually hit the middle, so you have a 3-way hit. But those are rare situations. You can do that with like multiple scores. And if you have a multiple score window and like 4 minutes to go, 5 minutes to go, sometimes on a final drive where a team is down 10 or 9 or something and may kick the field goal on fourth down, things like that, you can sort of situational have fun with that. But that's neither here nor there. Paul, awesome, as always, chatting with you, and thanks for taking the time, and let's stay hot.
Hey, I appreciate it. I hope we're both winners again this weekend, as well as the others listening out there, and thanks for having me on, Doug.
Kicking is for losers.
It always is, and the man who coined that phrase that has now taken the nation by storm, John Murray, Mr. Executive Director at the Westgate. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I feel like we're educating the next generation of how silly it is to kick field goals, how silly it is to punt. And I think it's kind of like our responsibility as the old guard of sports betting here.
You know, I heard you on the VSiN last night. I was actually driving home from work and heard you, and you mentioned the podcast. It was really fun just to get into the Kicking is for Losers. So it was a lot of fun, and good shout out by you for me. So thank you for that, sir.
I think I did VSiN on Sunday night with our friends Matt Humans and John Von Tobel, and I only mentioned this show because I wanted to make sure they knew that I picked the Colts on the NFL show with you before the game started, Colts -2.5, because my other play was the Bears.
Well, we knew that was a loser because I was on them. I mean, it's insane because you have two field goal misses. I'm not convinced. Yeah. I'm not sure the Zuerlein field goal was good. Okay.
How did the Bears not cover that game, by the way? I mean, I'm sure we'll do it on the NFL show, but come on. Give me a break.
So any crazy kicking situations for college this weekend? I'm trying to remember. It's just so frequent.
Yeah, I think my favorite one would have to be Rutgers. They punted on, I want to say, 4th and 4 from about midfield, again, which, like, in a vacuum may not seem that dumb, but you've got to consider they're playing Ohio State. They basically have no chance of stopping Ohio State from scoring on any drive. It doesn't matter if Ohio State starts from the 10 or starts from midfield. They're going to get a touchdown either way. I thought it was a ridiculous decision. But I think the guy muffed the punt for Ohio State. So,
well, yeah, that cost me my first half team total. And I still – they gave up a touchdown. I would have covered the first half 31.5 to 34. The Rutgers defense did stop, actually, Ohio State on the one-yard line – on third and fourth goal, fourth and goal.
That's true. I forgot about that.
They bowed up, Murray.
All right, but I still think, like, long term, you can't really expect to ever stop Ohio State from scoring. Although I know that they did in that one shocking sequence, but still,
I mean,
I thought they should have gone for it.
And then, by the way, since we're on the topic of my picks last week,
okay,
what the f- is UMass doing? Right? Okay. They have not scored a touchdown all game. They have 6 points, so they're not being shut out. They haven't scored a touchdown. They are playing Northwestern scrubs late, okay? You've actually kind of gashed them for like 7 yard runs back-to-back play. It's the final minute. You're taking your time. You're in first and goal inside the 10. There's about 15 seconds to go. You don't call a timeout. Don't you have an obligation as a coach to try to score a touchdown there?
I think you have an obligation as a coach to try anything you can to win the game. Not that they could have won the game, but like I think you should always be trying to score, yes.
Now, I mean, here you have a team, and it's just ironic because it was back-to-back weeks. You have 39-point games. So the previous week, a team up 39 inside the 5 is throwing and trying to score a touchdown instead of taking a knee, and that's Dabo Swinney and the Tigers at NC State. Mm-hmm. The next week, coincidentally the same margin, 39 points, you have a team down 39, not trying to score, and just letting the clock. I mean, I was – now, granted, I'm on team total over, but what the F?
It was very frustrating, but I thought this was a family show. I didn't think we were – I thought this was presented by Disney. I didn't think we were allowed to curse. So it's going to be a lot of extra work for Travis this week.
Well, Murray, I didn't curse. I said bleep. I said bleep, so I don't know what you're talking
about. Well, right.
I have the same philosophy as you.
Excellent, excellent.
So how
sometimes, you know what? I did curse. I cursed to myself when the Bears didn't cover on Sunday night. I was so annoyed about that, but we'll get into that tomorrow.
I was torn between the Bears and the under on that one in terms of like my best bet of the weekend, and I went Bears, obviously. Okay.
Yeah, I like the Bears a lot in that spot. The Rams are just so banged up. But look, we didn't do well in the NFL. We didn't do well in college football either. You know, everybody's talking about how chalky the NFL day was, and it was incredibly chalky, but we really didn't have a good Saturday at all either.
So what were the big games last weekend that cost you?
Alabama certainly was probably Exhibit A. Alabama covering. They were at Mississippi State.
That was the worst line I'd seen. I couldn't believe it wasn't like 30. Like, I was stunned at that line.
We, you know what we could have used? We could have used a touchdown from Nebraska there at the end. They were down by 16. And we really could have used them to punch it in. They had a first and goal inside the five-yard line. Mm. And they just couldn't punch it in, so Wisconsin covered. Everybody was on Florida. They were at Missouri. There was a really bizarre play where it looked like clearly Missouri intercepted a pass, and they just gave it to Florida as a catch. It was a very strange call. I didn't understand it. But well, we really could have been bailed out in the night game. So many parlays went to Oklahoma money line. Including one guy had an 18 parlay. It was like 4,000 to win 53,000, and his last leg was Oklahoma money line. And there were just a ton of other Oklahoma money line parlays. And we could have been bailed out if Baylor had won the game. They go up 28-3 when they give the game away in the second half. That one really hurt us.
Yeah, that was a stunning turn because usually these teams with bad defenses can't get the stops, enough stops to come all the way back. But that OU did get enough stops, and that's.
Well, I don't think did Baylor even score in the second half. I mean, I don't know what happened. The wheels just came off there for the Bears, and no doubt that was a very, very costly game for us.
First possession of the second half, I think it was a long run. And the guy just like drops the ball, like approaching midfield.
Yeah.
Really weird. I was like, oh, it's gonna be one of these games. I see.
And really, Oklahoma could have covered the spread. You know, Jalen Hurts fumbled the ball going into the end zone. They could have covered the spread there if they'd gotten a touchdown on that play.
Right.
So it could have been even worse for us, but it was still pretty bad. It was a bad Saturday. It wasn't as bad as Sunday. Sunday was a catastrophe, I'm sure, all over the state. But Saturday was not a good day for us at the book.
All right, good. Win-win for the public. So we'll talk about the NFL tomorrow. But let's. What are the plays from behind the counter this week?
So this week we got a pretty good card. I don't think it's as good as last week in terms of the matchups, but there are some pretty high-profile games. I think this one's kind of interesting. Well, let's start with tonight's game. We did see some money come in. Big favorite, Miami of Ohio. They laid 30 with Miami of Ohio, now a 32-point favorite. They're at home against Akron, a little Wednesday night action here.
So you did take stuff on the some action on the favorite.
Yeah, and we also took another weeknight game. We took a bet, Colorado State getting 7 points. They're at Wyoming. That game is Friday night in Laramie. So two weeknight games where we've seen some sharp money come in.
Yeah, I kind of like Miami of Ohio, too. Obviously, Akron 0-10 against the spread this year.
Yeah.
Hasn't happened in like 15 years, starting the first 10 ATS losses.
It's been a struggle for the Zips. There's no question about that.
Yeah, although their quarterback has looked competent. I think he did not play all year. He's missed some time is what I'm saying. And he looked okay. I mean, I'm trying to think of, you know, covering a million points. That's all. Okay. So
you want to go to Saturday?
Yeah,
I got a handful on Saturday. A couple that look like maybe potentially a look-ahead spot here. Virginia, they're playing at home against Liberty. They've got a big game next week against Virginia Tech. We saw money come in on Liberty plus 18 in that game. They're down to 17. Now, another team that looks like they're in a look-ahead spot is Michigan. Michigan's at Indiana this week. Obviously, they've got their big game next week against Ohio State. We saw a very sharp group come in here yesterday. They laid 8.5 with the Wolverines. Michigan now a 9.5-point favorite at Indiana.
I was on Indiana last week, very happy, but this team is a little...
That was a good pick, man.
Well,
Indiana last week, that was a good one.
Yeah, it was just a bet against Penn State. I mean, those teams that have, like Minnesota this week would be a kind of a fade as well, but I kind of like them just because Northwestern's so bad. But you just have to be careful of just that locker room in that week when you lose, when you suffer your first loss and a lot of the aspirations are gone. So that my point is Indiana's record is a little misleading.
You know, we saw that. I think a great example of what you're talking about was the Notre Dame-Virginia Tech game. Notre Dame hosted Virginia Tech the week after they lost to Michigan, which essentially knocked them out of the college football playoff. And they just no-showed that game, almost lost that game.
Yeah, they were down big.
Yeah, Virginia Tech, of course, easily covered as a 17-point underdog, and the Irish were lucky to even win the game.
Yeah, no, and we've seen it year after year after year. And even if it's not, like, championship aspirations, like last year, I think I referenced this last week on the pod while explaining Indiana, it was Kentucky was the big undefeated team, right? That started 6-0, finally lost, I believe it was Georgia, I want to say, a year. And then the next week they lost outright at Tennessee as a six-point favorite. It's just it's the giant flat spot, and that you kind of have to circle those. I mean, going to the NFL, look at the Vikings last week. Now, it's a different situation, but you win that big Sunday night game, and you come home to Denver, and you just dig yourself a 20-0 hole. There's just no energy.
That was another one, too. If we could have got the Vikings to lose, that would have really helped save the day Sunday.
So when there's a sport that requires such emotion, and then you have college kids who are not professionals, let's face it, right? So now the math model guys will tell you that they absolutely exist, flat spots, all that stuff. It's just very difficult to pinpoint it, right? Like, predicting it is the hard part, right? Seeing it. So when you're watching a game, sometimes that's why live wagering is so great. You kind of look for the clues that you were suspecting might be there, and then boom, you can pounce. But you obviously have to be, you know, right more than wrong, and that's tough. But
sometimes it's really hard to tell when these teams are going to no-show. Like, who knew that the Packers were going to no-show in that game at the Chargers a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
I didn't.
Unless you're out partying with them in costumes. But they were wearing costumes, Murray. It was Halloween week. They were out. Who could tell who they were?
I got some buddies in L.A. Nobody tipped me off, I'll tell you that much. Disappointing.
You got to expand that bay for your bookmaking. You need those sources. Yeah,
I need it. I need all the help I can get. Here's one. Duke at Wake Forest. We saw sharp money come in on Wake, -6.5 and -7, and they're now a 7.5-point favorite. You know, Wake just got clobbered by Clemson last week. Duke is a team. You want to talk about a team that's had the wheels come off.
Yeah, right.
Syracuse beat them wire to wire last Saturday as like an 11-point dog. I think one of the most shocking results, if you look back on early season results in college football, how about the fact that Duke won by 5 touchdowns in Blacksburg on a Friday night back in September? How did that game ever happen?
And that was the last time Duke covered.
Yeah, it's shocking,
man.
September
27th, they have pushed or lost ATS every game since.
They got smoked by UVA, I think, the next week or 2 weeks later, and they, you know, they just don't look good at all right now. Sharp money coming in on Wake here. You know, Wake got steamrolled last weekend, but look, Clemson might be the best team in the country right now. I think Ohio State would be favored against Clemson on a neutral field, but I would pick Clemson. I would pick Clemson to beat anybody right now.
Yeah, it sounds like Ohio State's got that 1 or 2 point favorite kind of power rating, but I find it hard for Clemson. I'm on Clemson. I haven't gotten off the train. Everyone's sort of laughing at me.
It's like last year, man. It's, you know, last year we knew Alabama was going to be favored, but I maintained all along I thought Clemson would win that game, and they did. Similar this year. I know Ohio State would be favored, and I'm not saying that they wouldn't, but I think Clemson would beat them.
I like Clemson, too. I really do. I think Penn State has these too many, like, third and sixes. Now, they cover them all. I mean, they convert them all, excuse me. And speaking of Michigan, you mentioned Michigan, just to go back to that pick at Indiana. Since that loss to Wisconsin, they've covered 6 of 7.
Michigan's been rolling, man. I mean, think about what they did at Notre Dame, that game a few weeks ago, and they look really good right now. For all the grief that Harbaugh has got this season, and a lot of it is deserved, if he wins these next two games, if he beats Indiana on Saturday and somehow beats Ohio State next weekend, and that's a big if, certainly this has to be considered a very successful season in Ann Arbor, right?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Any other plays?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple more here. We saw money come in on Colorado, a very respected group. They took 15 points with the Colorado Buffaloes. That line is now down to 14. They are at home in Boulder on Saturday night. They're playing the Washington Huskies.
Interesting. The question is, what are you going to get out of the Huskies?
Yeah, they've been a strange team this season, kind of a tough team to project. They really should have beat Oregon. If you remember that game about a month ago, gave that game away in the fourth quarter. And now you look at Oregon, and they're a team that, if they win out, very well could end up in the college football playoff.
I would say Stanford Steve said this, and I would agree, just because I couldn't come up with a better. He's said probably the most disappointing team in the country, right? Washington, given the expectations coming in, they already have 4 losses.
I mean, they're definitely on the list, yeah. I can't disagree with that. I mean, I don't know that they're number one, but they're up there for sure.
I had higher aspirations for Akron and UMass, but that's just me.
Of course.
Colorado. So Colorado's now, they've been a little bit more competent at home. Like, sort of competent. But this is sort Washington of off a bye. I mean, I guess they've covered their last two at home.
I don't think you like it. I feel like you're not into this one.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you after the first 5 minutes of the game what's going to happen. You know, I'll tell you. You know, you got to see what you're getting out of Washington, because I have tried to fade that team a couple times, and it's just like, whoa, okay, so the real Washington's playing.
Yeah, I mean, there's the talent levels there. I've always been a Chris Peterson fan, to tell you the truth. This just hasn't been their year in Washington. And the Pac-12, a conference that I wrote off early in the year, and with the results of last weekend, with Tua getting hurt, with Baylor losing, Minnesota losing, Auburn losing, is it possible that the Pac-12 champion gets into the college football playoff? I think that they will.
It should.
If Georgia loses to LSU, I think they're going to go to the Pac-12, especially if it's Oregon. Consider if Oregon wins out, they would be on a 12-game winning streak. Their only loss would be that neutral site game against Auburn that they should have won. So really, I think we'd be looking at a Pac-12 champion in the college football playoff for the first time since this Washington team played Alabama a few years ago.
Yeah, and scored the opening touchdown. I'll be furious if Alabama goes, just because this common opponent of the win at Auburn. It would just be so ridiculous. But
yeah, I don't think Alabama. If Georgia wins out, they're going to get in, and they should get in, by the way. But if they don't, I think it's going to be the Pac-12 champion edging out Oklahoma. That's my guess.
I don't know. It affects your futures. You guys have Bama 25-1, right?
Last I looked at it, it was 18-1, unless we moved it up yesterday. I wasn't in the book yesterday, but I can look at it right now. 16-1, Alabama to win it.
You're on the low side there, huh?
Yeah. I mean, we're not giving up on Alabama just yet, because if they were to blow out Auburn, and we have them as a 2.5-point favorite in that game, I would just never say never.
See, I think it's one of those things where the odds should be pretty low to get there, but to win it all, it should be high, because I don't think they have any chance against those big top teams without Tua. So that's just my opinion. It is still Bama. They're still loaded at other positions. What other picks do you have?
Let me do a homer pick. West Virginia, we saw sharp money come in +7.5 and +7 on the Mountaineers. They're at home in Morgantown against Oklahoma State. Keep an eye on the status of Oklahoma State quarterback Spencer Sanders this week. Chance he doesn't go for the Pokes.
Yeah, he's been dynamic. I like watching him and Chubbard play. So that'd be interesting. So the Mountaineers have been tricky for me to pick on.
Yeah, you know, they're. I would call this a relatively successful year for West Virginia. I mean, I know their win loss record doesn't really show it, but they pretty much lost everybody from last season, and I think they've done a pretty solid job overall. That was a big win for them. Saturday they won at Kansas State.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very, very big win for the Mountaineers. Actually, a very big win for us here at the book. One of the few favorites that actually lost, and it broke up some of the money line parlays we had here.
Okay. Anything else? Is that the last one?
Yeah. I'll give you one more. Just because there's been a lot of steam on this one. It's the late game, 8:00 local time here in Las Vegas. We saw money come in on Hawaii -1, -2, -2.5. Hawaii now -3. They're at home against San Diego State. A lot of money on that game right now.
On the Rainbows. Rainbow Warriors.
All on the Rainbows, yeah. We need the Aztecs huge. Of course, it's only Wednesday morning here as we record this show. But as of right now, they're one of our biggest decisions of the week.
Interesting. Interesting. We had Paul Stone on earlier in the show. He likes the under in that game. He doesn't trust San Diego State's offense at all.
I'll have to listen to the show. What else was Paul thinking this week?
You'll have to listen to the show. No, just kidding.
Listen to the show. No,
he's
like
on
Paul.
Tulane and Tulsa at home, and he likes the Buckeyes as well.
Yeah, oh, that's one too. As the last one, I'll give you that one as the final one. We saw a group lay 18 with Ohio State. Now we're at 18.5. Why is that game at 9 a.m.? What's up with that?
Travis, our resident Ohio State expert.
I'm not happy with it, but here's the crazy thing is I don't control these things.
No, really?
I know it's crazy.
Really? I just assumed. Like, I'm looking at the schedule right now. I don't even know what we're going to show on audio in the late slot. I mean, certainly we'll go with Ohio State, Penn State in the morning, and then we'll probably go with that A&M Georgia game in the afternoon. The primetime schedule is pretty weak this week.
I don't see much at all. Game day is in Columbus. What's the 8 o'clock ABC game? Do we know?
It's Oregon, right?
Is it Oregon, Arizona? Oregon versus Arizona State. I mean, that's the 4:30 local time game here on ABC, but that's pretty weak.
I like the Sun Devils there.
Not a great schedule.
You're not going to put Arkansas LSU up 44 point line.
Yeah, that should be a pretty competitive game, but no, I don't. I'm not planning on that one.
Let me ask you this. What's the money line parlay of Oregon and Utah winning out till they face each other, and then also Clemson, Ohio, everyone winning out, like everything winning out to where the Pac-12 champ has a chance to play into the playoff? I don't think that's going to happen.
I can tell you that we've got Utah at 25-1. I think we have Oregon at 40-1 because, you know, still I think they need some things to happen for them to get in, and they'd be big underdogs if they did get in. You got to consider that too. So it's still pretty unlikely that one of the Pac-12 teams will emerge as the champion of this thing, but I think
Pac-12's in if they went out.
Not if Georgia beats LSU.
Right. So that was my question. So if LSU and Clemson and Ohio State went out.
Well, you're certainly assuming that Clemson and Ohio State are going to win out. I don't see it. And LSU, as long as they win this big barn burner with Arkansas and they win their game next week, even if they lose to Georgia, they're still going to get in. They should. So there's really only one spot up for grabs.
So you think two-loss Georgia gets in ahead of the Pac-12 champ?
No, I think Georgia, they have to win out. Georgia has to win. If Georgia wins out, they finish 12-1.
Correct. My bad.
If Georgia loses any of these games.
Excuse me, they won at Auburn. Apologize.
If they lose to Texas A&M, if they lose to LSU in the championship game, they're out. But if they win their last three games, they go 12-1, they win the SEC, they'd have a number of really impressive wins, obviously beating LSU being the best one. Winning at Auburn's a good win. They beat Florida. They beat Notre Dame. If they go 12-1, Georgia's going to make the college football playoff. So the anti-SEC people can have their meltdown, but I don't think there'd be much argument that Georgia wouldn't deserve to be there if they do go 12-1.
All right, my man. I think that does it for us, right?
Yeah, man. I'll be back to talk a little NFL tomorrow and hoping for a better week this week for the sports books.
I'm not. No.
I appreciate that. Right. I appreciate your support.
All right, be well.
All right, take care.
Pay that man his money.
That's the idea. So thanks to Bob Lee there, continuing to lend his voice to our wonderful money-making, successful podcast. And let's try to stay hot. So thanks to John Murray and Paul Stone as well. Travis, we'll end the show with your thoughts on the Buckeyes laying the 18.5.
It's a lot of points against this team. And all I can think about is just all the games where it's been really close. So
what, the in between these two teams? Because there haven't been many close games with Ohio State this year.
No, yeah. I'm talking about Penn State over the past 3 years.
So you have a top 10 Penn State team, and a little fun factoid for you. Penn State, if this line stays 17 or higher, would be the fifth top 10 team since 2000. So it's two decades, right? To be getting at least 17 points.
The big thing that I want to know is if KJ Hamler is playing or not. If he's full go, if he isn't going, then give me the points and let just take the point out.
So he's the swing.
I think he's because they need to hit some home runs, and they can't hit home runs, so they don't have their home run hitter.
I just remember, I just have this vision of like a Penn State's offense just really struggling against Iowa. Even at times to Sparty had some turnovers.
Last week Indiana was like, if they didn't have a couple key turnovers and stuff like that, they were hanging around there.
Well, at least they scored, though. It's just when you can't score, that's when it can get to a blowout.
And then Sean Clifford with his feet, can he do something? But he also loves to just kind of do the jump ball throws, and it's like your receivers come down with a lot, so it looks good. But
I wouldn't take the points. I would need 22, 23.
Really?
Yeah. It's Ohio State or pass for me. Okay, my man, that'll do it. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the NFL, and thanks to everyone for downloading and listening. We have a fun story tomorrow about a prop bet. Excuse me, a parlay bet of $20 nearly became $50,000 for one of our loyal listeners of the pod. That's tomorrow.